Let's talk
as interesting as possible. So today I'm going to be talking about reconstructing refractive index discontinuities in phase contrast tomography. Basically, what I'm going to be doing is applying some of the mathematical machinery of local tomography that was developed by several people in this audience. I'm going to combine that mathematical machinery with an understanding of the imaging physics to interpret the images that we can reconstruct from truncated phase contrast projections. And I'd like to acknowledge my collaborators, my student, Daxin Shi, Francisco DiCarlo, who's a physicist at the Advanced Photon Source, and Xiaotran Pan at the University of Chicago. Okay, so here's a brief outline. I'm going to talk about phase contrast tomography a little bit. There's going to be a talk devoted to that later in the week. I'm going to talk about why the local tomography problem is particularly important in phase contrast tomography. I'm going to propose a simple back projection only local tomography algorithm and interpret the reconstructed image mathematically. And I'm going to also interpret some other possible approaches. And at the end, I'll show some images. Okay, so many of you may be familiar with phase contrast tomography, others may not. The idea behind phase contrast tomography is to use a spatially coherent wave field to image some scattering object and use the real differences in the real refractive index as the contrast mechanism rather than differences in the absorption properties. This is important because it may permit for the visualization of objects that have very similar X-ray absorption properties but will have but can have very different refractive properties. Also, I should note that there's a dosimetric advantage to phase contrast imaging, that is, namely, differences of attenuation coefficients of soft tissues decrease rapidly as you increase energy more rapidly than do the differences in the real component of the refractive index. So when you're doing phase contrast imaging, conceptually you can operate at higher energies and get the same contrast that you would using conventional radiography at lower energies, but you'll be using less dose. Okay, so here's just a cartoon just to reinforce the meaning of phase contrast tomography. So we assume we have some coherent wave field that illuminates some object. In this talk, we'll just assume that this is some parallel beam incident wave field. The object is characterized in general by a complex refractive index distribution, where the imaginary part of that distribution represents the absorption properties. If we consider a measurement plane immediately behind the object in the so-called contact print plane, and we measure the intensity, well, that measured intensity will correspond exactly to what we would normally measure in a radiography experiment using an incoherent wave field. But as we move the detector plane away, the measured intensity projection will be different than what you would normally measure in a radiography experiment using an incoherent source. That is namely because as the wave field propagates along the z-axis, the optical axis, that process is described by Fresnel propagation. So variations in intensity can be transformed into variations in the phase and vice versa. So phase modulations can cause intensity modulations as we move our detector plane away. In normal X-ray radiography, what we measure on this plane would be the same as what we measure on that plane if we neglect scatter. But it's not the case here. Okay. So here's the geometry that I'm going to assume. Let's imagine some 3D object that's centered at the origin of this XYZ system. We have some incident wave field that is traveling along the positive eta direction, where cosine eta z is just a rotated version of XYZ, where this rotation angle phi is about the z-axis. And we have a detector plane which is parallel to the z-axis, so the detector plane is indexed by coordinates cosine and z, and it's located a distance d from the center of the object. So what we'll do at one projection, we'll measure the intensity in this detector plane, and then we'll rotate the orientation angle phi to collect a set of these 2D projections around the whole object. Okay. So let this function I denote the measured intensity data in the Kasai-Z detector plane located at a distance d from the origin, oriented at angle phi. So this represents our measurement data. And here is a description of the imaging model if we assume near field conditions. So if we assume that our measurement plane is in the near region of the Fresnel zone, then it can be shown that the intensity measured in the detector plane is related to the intensity measured in the contact print plane times this guy, where lambda is the wavelength of the incident radiation. This is a Laplacian, 2D Laplacian operator acting on the detector face. So this is acting on the Kasai Z coordinates. This function, capital phi, is related to the wave number, 2 pi over lambda, times this integral, which can be interpreted as an X-ray transform. Or in other words, this can be viewed as a stack of 2D radon transforms along the Z axis of the object function A, because we have a Z here, we have a Z here. So for a given Z, this integral just describes a 2D radon transform in the transverse plane at a distance Z from the origin. Oh, and the object function here, A, is equal to the refractive index minus 1. So this is the guy that we aim to reconstruct. So, so again, this is the imaging model. This is what we measure. This is the intensity in the contact print plane, which can be measured, or if we're talking about a pure phase object, if we assume the incident wave field is a plane wave with unit amplitude, then this term is simply 1. All right? And this is the guy that we want to reconstruct, which is buried in the Laplacian of that guy. Okay, so let's just talk about the global reconstruction problem. So goal, reconstruct the object function from knowledge of these untruncated 2D projections for all view orientations phi. And actually, Bronnikoff has proposed a nice, exact, analytic reconstruction algorithm for this problem. So using the assumptions that I assumed in writing down that imaging model, if you have complete data, then using Bronnikoff's inversion formula, you have an exact exact way to reconstruct the object in principle. Also in practice, especially at synchrotron beamlines, it's common practice just to use the 2D FBP algorithm to reconstruct phase contrast images. So what they'll do is they'll just act the 2D FBP algorithm on the data corresponding to each row of the detector and then reconstruct some object slice by slice. Actually, it seems kind of ad hoc, but as I'll talk about later in this work, you can interpret it nicely. What you reconstruct is actually an edge map. But anyway, both this approximate reconstruction algorithm and Bronnikoff's exact reconstruction algorithm are global in the sense that they require the processing of untruncated projections. Okay, in this slide I'm going to try to convince you that the local tomography problem is relevant and important in phase contrast imaging. In applications of microtomography, particularly at synchrotron beamlines, the field of view of the imaging system may be intentionally reduced in the aim of increasing the spatial resolution of the measured projections. So that's what I'm trying to show here in this diagram. What they do is, this is an experimental trick. You can, if you collimate the beam down intentionally, so let's say we're only interested in some obtaining some information about detailed structures in the middle of this object, in between the dotted lines. Then what we can do is collimate the beam, irradiate the object. Behind the object, we can have some focus. Well, first of all, there'd be a scintillator screen here, which I didn't draw. And then there would be a focusing optic, which transmits this truncated wave field onto the full face of our detector. So by doing this, we can take some part of the transmitted beam corresponding to a small cross area and project that onto the full detector face. This effectively decreases the pixel size of the measurement, because there's a physical limit to how small you can manufacture the detector pixels. But by using this focusing technique, you can effectively reduce the pixel size. For example, at the microtomography station at the advanced photon source at Argonne National Laboratory, by doing this sort of trick, using a field of view, so with a beam width of 1.3 millimeters, they can get submicron pixel sizes, which is nice. Okay, that's all I'll say about that. Oh, let me say one other thing. In this talk, what I'm going to be assuming is that we have an incident plane wave irradiating the object, and that the field is truncated in the plane of the focusing optic. It simplifies things. But we expect qualitatively similar results in both cases. So let me just emphasize here, the trick of creating truncated projections is to, the purpose of this is to increase the spatial resolution, not necessarily to limit the dose delivered to the object, although that may be important in certain cases. Okay, so we know that the exact object function cannot be exactly reconstructed from truncated projections. So the question is, what can we reconstruct exactly from truncated projections? In local tomography for absorption, conventional absorption CT, we know we can reconstruct lambda A, for example. In this case, can we reconstruct something analogous to that? That's what we want to ask. And what reconstruction algorithms do we have available to reconstruct such things? Okay, so here's my one slide on local tomography theory, since there's probably half a dozen people in the audience who contributed significantly to this field. I won't dwell on it. For those of you who are not familiar, local tomography methods have been developed for absorption CT, and the idea is, well, not to reconstruct the attenuation coefficient map itself, but to reconstruct some transformed version of the attenuation coefficient map. In lambda tomography, the goal is to reconstruct lambda mu, where formally lambda is defined by the negative square root of the negative Laplacian operator. And mathematicians have shown that this guy preserves the wavefront set. So lambda A and A have the same wavefront set. So if we reconstruct lambda A, we know that that guy contains the same singularities, edges, so forth, that the real object A has. And most importantly, we know lambda mu can be reconstructed from truncated projection data. Okay. So with the results of conventional lambda tomography in the back of our minds, now let's look at the truncated phase contrast tomography problem. What I'm going to do is I'm going to look at three different reconstruction algorithms for a local phase contrast CT and try to interpret them in terms of this lambda tomography framework. Why do we care about that? Well, one thing is it will provide, we'd like to know what we're reconstructing. So if we're going to apply a reconstruction algorithm, it's nice to know what we're doing. So having a mathematically clear interpretation of the reconstructed quantity provides for a non-heuristic application of certain reconstruction approaches. And the other motivation for interpreting this problem in terms of the lambda tomography framework is that there has been work done by several people in this room in reconstructing the magnitude of discontinuities from lambda images. So if we can interpret our reconstructed images in terms of some lambda operation acting on them, it may give us the opportunity to also reconstruct the size of the refractive index jumps. So basically, I'm riding on the back of the mathematicians who did previous work and trying to apply it here. Okay. Oh, did I actually didn't get done talking here? So the first algorithm I'm going to talk about is a simple back projection only reconstruction algorithm. So for the rest of the talk, I'm going to be using this data function M, which I define in this way. So again, this is just the intensity that's measured in the detector plane oriented at angle phi. This is the intensity in the contact print plane, which we can assume is 1 for a phase object. So this guy is completely determined from the phase contrast projections, and we'll assume that this is our input to our reconstruction algorithms. From the definition of our imaging transform, this data function is directly related to the Laplacian of the X-ray transform of A, or I've written it this way, this is a stack of radon transforms of A along the z-axis. And I'll denote this X-ray transform, or the stack of, equivalently, the stack of 2D radon transforms, I'll denote that by this function P. Okay. Okay, so now if we just simply take this data function and apply a 2D back projection operation to it, let's see what happens. We know that minus Laplacian is the definition of this lambda squared operator, so we can write the formula in this way. It looks very similar to FBP algorithm for lambda tomography, but not quite. There's sort of a mismatch. This back projection operator corresponds to a 2D FBP algorithm for lambda tomography, but this filtering is a 2D filtering, so this filtering corresponds to a local FBP algorithm for the full X-ray transform. So there's a mismatch in the forms of the back projection and the filtering. And because of that, after some simple manipulations, we can show that the image we get by back projecting is equal to lambda squared A convolved with this 1 over R blurring kernel. And this is not particularly surprising. This corresponds to the point spread function of a 2D back projection operation. But this is interesting because this tells us if we take the modified data function, simply back project it, we reconstruct something that's directly related to lambda squared A. So we know that something contains information regarding the discontinuities in our object function. And the beauty of this approach, well, it's so simple. This is the quintessential local tomography algorithm. It's back projection only. So this is the quintessential local algorithm. The reason we don't have to do any explicit filtering is because the wave propagation physics effectively does the filtering of the projection data that one might naturally that one might have to explicitly apply in the absorption CT case. And also, I'll note that if we have a 2D object, so an object A that doesn't have any dependence along Z, then this back projection operator reconstructs lambda A exactly. And also, if we somehow were able to collect projections over the sphere and we did a 3D back projection, then this approach would correspond to the FBP algorithm, local FBP algorithm for the 3D X-ray transform. Okay. The second approach I'm going to consider is direct application of lambda tomography. So if you didn't know too much, like me, and you had truncated data, you might think, well, let me just apply one of these local tomography algorithms for absorption CT. Let me just apply it to the phase contrast algorithm. So what we're going to do here is we're just going to interpret what that gives you. So here I can write down the unregularized form for the 2D lambda FBP algorithm. Let this capital A LFBP denote the 3D Fourier transform of the reconstructed image. And after a few very, very simple steps, we can show that in the Fourier space, the reconstructed image corresponds to lambda squared A, again, times this frequency filter function. So again, we see that the reconstructed image corresponds to some filtered version of lambda squared. But now the filtering is different than we saw in the back projection only case, because now we're multiplying by nu x squared plus nu y squared. Here the high frequency components in each transverse plane of the reconstructed image will be enhanced instead of blurred by that 1 over r convolution. So, of course, we have to use a regularized lambda tomography algorithm if we choose to do this approach. And again, if we consider a pure 2D object, then this reconstruction approach gives you lambda cubed exactly, or lambda cubed acting on A exactly. Okay, so the third and last approach that I'll talk about is direct application of the FBP algorithm. So I mentioned at the beginning of my talk that in the experimental circles, it's not uncommon to simply apply a 2D FBP algorithm to phase contrast data. And following the same steps that we used to derive some of the previous results in this talk, you can show that such an operation will give you lambda squared A. So if you have untruncated projections and you're interested in reconstructing an edge map, then applying the FBP algorithm makes sense, because what we reconstruct is lambda squared A, which we know definitely contains accurate information about the edges. Now, the sort of interesting thing here is that empirically, it's been demonstrated that the FBP algorithm also reconstructs something very close to lambda squared A, even when the projections are truncated. So that's surprising to a reconstruction guy, because we all know that the FBP algorithm is a global algorithm. Radon transform inversion in 2D is global. So why can we get why do the effects of projection truncation not screw things up here in phase contrast tomography? So to answer this question, let's simplify things. Let's just consider a two-dimensional problem. So A is a function of x, y. We just have some two-dimensional object function. And let's assume that our projections, our data function, is truncated to some truncation radius, cosi sub r. So in other words, our data function is zero for value detector coordinates cosi greater than cosi sub r. Okay. Now, so we can write down the, if we apply the FBP algorithm to this truncated data set, we can mathematically express it in this way. Right. This is just the Hilbert transform version of the inverse radon formula. And to understand what's going on, it will be useful to decompose that formula into two terms. So if we can understand each of these two terms, then perhaps we can understand what's going on in the reconstructed image. Here, so let's look at the first term. First term, I'm calling A sub P sub L, because this term looks remarkably similar to an inversion formula for pseudo-local tomography. This kernel, H sub cosi sub R, is defined here. So this is basically a truncated Hilbert transform kernel. So this guy looks something like a inversion formula for pseudo-local tomography. And the second term here, in this case, we can interpret it as some error term. We can interpret it as something undesirable. Okay, so let's look at the first term, A sub P sub L. After some manipulations, it can be shown that this guy is equal to some radially symmetric convolution kernel, which depends on the truncation radius psi sub r convolved with lambda a. So the definition of this convolution kernel is given here. Inverse 2D radon transform acting, this should be an H. This is the truncated Hilbert kernel that I had on the previous slide. So inverse radon transform acting on the derivative of the truncated Hilbert transform kernel. And of course, I'm being sloppy here interpreting things as generalized functions. Okay, so when the truncation radius goes to infinity, so when we get back to the untruncated problem, it can be shown that this convolution kernel reduces to the inverse Fourier transform of the magnitude of the radial frequency vector in 2D space. So that implies that A sub PL reduces to lambda squared A, which is the result that I told you before. So this is consistent. Now let's look at the second term, which I'm calling the error term. So this term describes how the structures outside the ROI can influence reconstruction of the first term inside the ROI. If we look at the formula, it can be shown right away that when the projections become untruncated, this term goes to zero, and again we get back A sub R goes to lambda squared A. And the important thing is that it can be shown that this error term is generally small, except when there are a large number of discontinuities in A that reside outside but very close to the image ROI. But in general, it's small. And in all of our simulations, we have struggled to find objects in which it's not small, and we haven't had great success. Oh, and also, I could say something else. So the FBP algorithm for normal absorption CT, of course, can also be decomposed into two such terms. And in that case, this error term here would contribute to what's commonly known as cupping artifacts. So what we've seen is that, and what we've shown is that, for many objects of practical interest, the FBP algorithm behaves almost locally. The locations of edges and boundaries will be preserved, and it may or may not be possible to accurately estimate the magnitude of the discontinuities depending on the magnitude of that error term. Okay, I'm moving along here. So I just have a few numerical results to show. We generated phase contrast projection data using a simple Fresnel wave propagation model. And we assumed a phase object, so we assumed a real valued refractive index distribution. And we created truncated and also untruncated versions of the measurements. The untruncated versions correspond to a 256 by 256 squared detector phase, and the truncated versions just kept a 36 by 36 pixel square in the center of the detector. And here are some images. I forgot to show the true image, but the true image is just comprised of a bunch of spheres embedded inside of each other. So I'm showing a cross section through the z equal to zero plane of the reconstructed image. It was a 3D object we generated. So this is the image that's reconstructed from untruncated data using the back projection only algorithm. So we see this algorithm certainly contains information about the location of the edges and boundaries, but also you can see there's some non-uniformity in the gray level. So you can see the effects of that 1 over r blurring term. Now here's the image that we got when we simply applied the lambda FBP algorithm directly to the phase contrast projection data. So here we just have significant pixel values only at locations very close to the location of a boundary. So it looks very sharp. So this is consistent with some lambda or lambda squared type reconstructed image. And here is the image that we got by simply applying the conventional FBP algorithm to the same data. We can see that this image looks very, very similar to this image. Okay. Now, here on the bottom row, we show the reconstructions from the truncated projection data. So in the truncated projections, we're reconstructing just some small region in the center of the object that contains part of both of these spheres. So again, this is a local algorithm, a BP back projection only reconstructed image. This is the image reconstructed by local FBP and the image reconstructed by FBP. Again, these two guys look very similar. And what I've shown here are some profiles through the images I just showed you. I drew profiles through the central region, specifically through the ROI. Solid line in these figures are correspond to profiles through the images reconstructed from untruncated data, and the dashed lines correspond to the profiles reconstructed from the truncated data. So for the back projection algorithm, the two curves are superimposed at almost all places. So this is just consistent with the fact that the back projection only algorithm is truly local. So it doesn't care if there's projection truncation. Same can be said with the local FBP algorithm. It is truly local, so it doesn't care if there's projection truncation. On the other hand, here's the profiles through the FBP, conventional FBP images. And now we can see that there are some small differences. So there is some effect of the projection truncation on the reconstructed image, but it is very small, as you can see. So we don't blame the experimentalist for just applying it. So this is, let me just summarize, then we can go. So in this work, we've investigated the local phase contrast tomography reconstruction problem. We've shown that a simple back projection of the data function represents an effective local tomography algorithm. And this simple back projection only algorithm works because the wave propagation physics does the necessary data filtering. And we are currently investigating noise properties of these algorithms and also performing real data studies. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? Okay, three questions. Could you tell us how you constructed this phantom?
Yeah, the phantom was made up of just simple spheres that had different gray levels representing different refractive index values. So we had a large sphere which represented the background medium, and then inside that we had ordered rows of smaller spheres. And each collection of spheres was assigned a different gray level which represented different refractive index properties.
For what kind of energy of photons? It's a coherent beam of synchrotron light source photons.
Right. This work doesn't necessarily assume synchrotron radiation. It just assumes that you're using some spatially coherent wave field. So it could work in optical.
Absorption.
Well, here when we're imaging phase objects, we're assuming there is no absorption. By definition, is a phase object has no absorption.
No, but in real life?
Well, in real life, how you deal with it is you kick up the energy if it's possible. Because when we increase energy, the attenuation coefficient goes down because photoelectric contributions goes down with energy. And an object becomes an effectively phase object. You can any tissue relevant object can become an effectively almost pure phase object if you're willing to raise the energy high enough. That's one of the advantages of imaging at synchrotron sources.
What kind of energy are you talking about? Mass pair production?
No. No, not that high. At synchrotrons, at argon, for example, the typical energy range is between 10 and 30 keV.
Very thin objects?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's right. I didn't explicitly say that, but that's right. For this imaging model to be true, we're assuming very thin objects. So this.
Millimeter?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if people have pushed it past a millimeter, but probably on that order right now. That's what this technique is used mainly for microtomography applications, where you're trying to image some very very small scale structure. It's not used for imaging macroscopic objects, although. Perhaps it could be, but there are problems with that need to be worked out.
More questions? How does the wavelength relate to the small details in your objects?
What was the wavelength set at in the simulation?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I didn't include that, did I? Actually, what was the wavelength in the simulations? The object was very large compared to a wavelength.
200 wavelengths.
Yes. Otherwise, we'd have to consider a different imaging model. We'd have to account for more explicit effects of diffraction. And then we could use a diffraction tomography algorithm if that was the case.
Have you tried reconstructing the plane to the tip of those balls? Where there is significant z dependence?
I think we have looked at that. There were some artifacts near the tips. I don't remember exactly what they look like, but I remember we did see some artifacts in the tips. Just in conventional local tomography, you also see things like that.
In your derivative parameter, you have z derivative, right?
So,
near the center of the balls, z derivative is zero.
Right.
Tip, it will have overall influence over the image.
Right. No, that's true. It's because of that z derivative is why, for example, in the back projection only case, it's why we're not reconstructing lambda squared exactly, but we're reconstructing some blurred version of lambda squared. It's because of that guy.
With this assumption of the thin sample, is this really tomography? Are we just imaging?
This is a tomographic technique.
What kind? Could you have sliced through different layers in that sphere coming out, and at what point does it not become thin enough?
That's a good question. Exactly answer that question, I'm not sure. I mean, I guess it would depend on, you have to really look at the physics. When does the coherence of the beam degrade sufficiently enough that this imaging model is not valid?
With this phantom, could you have come forward so that we could have maybe moved out of those smaller spheres in your pomegranate there and seen them get smaller? Or we only saw one slice.
Right. Yeah, actually, we reconstructed other slices, and they look similar, except perhaps at the tips there might be some extra artifacts. But there's nothing particularly special. I didn't show this slice because it's the only one that looked good. But in terms of generating the forward data, I mean, we just exactly used the forward model. So in a sense, it's cheating. So we didn't test the validity of the model, forward model. We assumed the forward model is valid and just looked at the inverse problem.
Was all.